am I ever gonna get to welcome people to music video land?
Hello, everybody out there in music video land. My name is Adam Fairholm, and welcome to episode 38 of the Music Video Land podcast by FilmedInsert.com. And as ordered by a holographic image of Tupac Shakur, is Doug Klinger from Florida. How you doing, Doug?
Super good, Adam. How are you?
I'm great. It's summer has come to the United States, Doug.
Yeah, it's been here in Florida for the last several months.
I know, but it's just in North Carolina. It's just coming here. It's very, very hot. I hear it's very hot around the rest of the United States, and I'm excited because, I mean, summer is here.
Excited for the heat.
Yeah, and excited for summer music videos, which are always fun. Yeah, are there music video seasons?
There's definitely like a summer music video thing and the summer single. Somebody's gonna make them tuck their whole summers in.
So on the podcast this week, we are excited to welcome Mr. A.G. Rojas, who is a director as well as an editor of music videos. And if you have checked out the Jack White video for 16 Saltines in the past few weeks, which has gotten a lot of press and a lot of people are talking about it, then you've seen one of his works because he directed that one. Which is it's the second single off of the new Jack White album, Blunderbuss, his solo album.
One thing to note about this single, I've heard it described as a really rockin' song. I think you described it as that. Is that true, Adam?
I would describe it as a rockin' song. If you heard his first single off of it, Love Interruption, which was a pick of the week of mine a few weeks ago, it's a much quieter, more laid-back song. And the album actually doesn't come out until April 24th, but this is the second single off that. And it is a really fantastic video. AG has a lot of really interesting stuff, really things you just have to see to kind of get there, kind of things that don't work well when describing them, such as the Odd Future video for Earl, which you might have seen, shot before Odd Future was Odd Future, as well as a really long-form narrative video for a song called Hey Jane by a band called Spiritualized that features a black transvestite and is a really very cinematic, really beautiful video, and also features a very long one-shot, which is you sometimes see in films and people make a big deal out of it when it appears in films, but it's really cool to see that in a music video as well. So it was really fun talking to AG, and it's going to come up in the second half of the podcast.
And one thing to note about the Hey Jane music video is, unlike when you know, people will try this really long form music video from time to time, and you know, some people do it with success, like the Robbie Starbuck video for Smashing Pumpkins, and then other people do it with not so much success, like Lady Gaga, when she made that long, ridiculous video last year that she directed herself. This music video, however, really, really earns its length, I think, and it's definitely worth checking out. You know what I mean? People might be hesitant to watch kind of a long-form music video like that, but I say certainly watch this video, especially if you're going to listen to the interview, which would be weird if you, like, listened to just the first part of our show and not the interview portion, but hey, it's what you like.
Well, who are we to judge? And I completely agree with that, because I think a lot of times long-form music videos can be a little self-indulgent, especially with the Lady Gaga video. And what was that? What was that for? That song for? Hold on.
It was for the song that's like,
Marry the Night, Marry the Night. Yeah. That was good. And it's, I think that the reason that this video is successful is that it has a narrative arc, which sometimes people, when they're making narrative videos, they forget to have some sort of narrative arc, which is important. But we're going
to
talk.
It's a fine point, and not to just keep getting down this road, but Also, really great casting in the video, really believable casting, and which is something that we get into a little bit in the conversation as well. But that conversation doesn't happen for a good 15 minutes from now, wouldn't you say, Adam?
I would. So if you hate us, then skip ahead to that point. But for right now, we're going to talk about something that has the music. And the reason we're going to talk about it, because it has a visual element to it, is has everybody talking. And that is Tupac's appearance at the last music video, at the Coachella, a final night of Coachella last Sunday. And there's been a lot said about this. There seems to be a new article coming out every minute or so from a different organization, all along the lines of, you know, how did they do this? Why did they do it? What is... is this going to signal a new kind of future for music video, for music touring? And if you missed it, the link is in the show notes for it. But basically what happened was, during a set of the last night of Coachella, we won't call it a hologram, but an image of Tupac that appeared to be real floated, you know, up onto the stage, or kind of appeared on the stage, and then he rapped for two songs, and along with Snoop Dogg for one of them as well, who appeared on stage right next to them. He played a Hail Mary, and then what's the second song? Two American Gangsters.
Yeah, Two of America's Most Wanted.
I think it's Two of America's Most Wanted, right?
Yeah, I actually didn't watch the whole performance. I just kind of watched the beginning and the
Two songs. You didn't watch the whole performance. It's two songs. It takes like 10 minutes.
I didn't watch the whole thing. I didn't. I'm lame. I'm too much of a hipster.
We should mention that we do have some. So basically, what happened was.
Well, let me just say quickly, and then I have the video, and we'll link it to the show notes. That this isn't the first time that in a concert this technology has been used, and I was talking to people about this before, and I kept saying some country singer. Well, I found out who it was. Brad Paisley, in his last tour, had a hologram of Carrie Underwood that came out on the stage and sang a duet with him, and so a similar technology has been used. Now Carrie Underwood is alive, so
as far as we know.
Yeah, so it's not – right, she could have been a hologram this whole time. But as far as we know, she's alive, and so it's not quite as interesting because she's alive, and we know that they could just film her and have her be a hologram of herself. But the technology of – so, you know, if this moment is – this moment is probably more of something that's on the line of things that could change – live performances, because I talked to someone who went to the Brad Paisley concert, and they didn't know that it was a hologram. They were like, I can't believe Carrie Underwood was there. And then somebody else was in the room who had also been at that concert and said, oh no, that was a hologram, and then showed like all these links and stuff. So it's something they've been doing. However, I think we have a scoop on how they were able to make a dead person happen.
That's so right.
We should say that
you know, people, when this came out, people were kind of amazed at the technology, and a few people pointed out this is actually a very old technique that's been used. They used it at the 48th Grammys to have Madonna appear alongside gorillas, who are fictional, you know, cartoon characters, and which was done with to great effect. And it's an old filming technique called Pepper's Ghost. Which, if you've ever seen, if you've ever gone to like the Haunted Mansion at Disney World or Disneyland, they use the same effect to make the ghost. It's basically one of those old-timey effects with a mirror. And in this case, it was a Mylar sheet that was dropped. I think the company behind this that Dr. Dre hired, Digital Domain, made this Mylar sheet that dropped down, I think, in like 30 seconds or something like that for a setup. And then it was projected under the stage onto this. But everybody was kind of wondering, you know, how, because as other people have mentioned, Tupac is obviously dead since 1996. Coachella started in 1999, and at the beginning of the set, Tupac says, "What's up, Coachella?" Which obviously he's never said that before. So Dr. Dre has apparently requested, he's not giving any interviews about this right now, he's requested that the people behind a Digital Domain remain very tight-lipped about this, but yeah, we had the first person we had on the show. We had three people: Pedro Flores, Mike Diva Dahlquist and Josh Haraway, who was in a video called I'm on Crack by the Lefterites as an actor. And he wasn't appearing as Tupac in that video, but he is a Tupac impersonator. And there are many of them. What's that?
But he, well, I was going to say, there are many of them, but he claims to be the first, and I wouldn't dispute him on it. And also, in other Mike Diva videos, which you could find on the site, I believe in the video for 303, I think it's called Robots, that Mike Diva directed, features Josh Haraway as Tupac. So
right, you can find him in there. He has done a lot of work as Tupac, and it was just funny that we're both Facebook friends with him, and a picture of him and Dr. Dre appeared on his Facebook wall and as his actual profile on Monday morning. So obviously, since Dr. Dre produced this whole thing, his name is directly attached with it, and Josh is a Tupac impersonator, there is a little bit of a connection there. We couldn't get anything out of Josh or anybody else because, as I previously mentioned, a moratorium has been put on how this has been done, which is actually kind of smart because it adds a little bit of an air of mystery to it. Although Digital Domain, their party line on how they created it was, they said it was created by looking at archival footage and photos as reference. But in the short production time they had to do this, I'm an expert on this, but they only had a few months to do this. I would think they would need some sort of body who, resembled in some way Tupac's for some sort of reference, that knew his movements and had studied him as a performer in some capacity. And that seems like it was definitely Josh Haraway, as far as we can tell.
Our guess, we're going to add to the speculation of this video, and the world's going to go nuts because we're naming names.
That's right. Nobody's safe. We're naming names. Dr. Dre, Digital Domain.
Josh
Haraway. And if you're not friends with him on Facebook, I think you can just still see his picture. It's just him with Dr. Dre. And he said that, but it's funny that
he's got a fan page.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Josh Haraway, world's first Tupac impersonator. So, I mean, he even, to the point where I'm pretty sure he goes down to the Chinese theater in Hollywood as Tupac.
Oh, yeah.
And takes pictures with people. I think I've seen pictures of him down there as Tupac, so.
It's funny, though, because people have been putting pictures on his wall. There's this great one of a scene in Star Wars where R2-D2 projects a hologram, and instead of it being Princess Leia, it's Tupac, so. It's fun. I wonder if that'll become some sort of meme. But anyway.
The Tupac is going to be like a meme for being able to come back to life. I saw, like, Drake that said YOLO, and then Tupac's face, and then Drake's sad face.
So why was Drake sad?
Because Tupac lived twice.
Mm-hmm. Now, I get it now. Wow. So I guess one of the conversations that people have been having, which is interesting, is if this is going to have some sort of impact on live touring. Because if you have not... kept up with the music industry lately, selling albums is not really a lucrative thing. There's actually a Planet Money a show that they did about this, which is absolutely fascinating, about Katy Perry. Looking at her year, I think they chose 2010, which is a huge year for Katy Perry, and they went through and talked to the people at her record label and sort of tallied up how much they made off Katy Perry in a year where she was a huge pop star, and it was somewhere in the neighborhood of $10 million, which is absolute chicken scratch. The real money is in touring, which is a huge business, and that's why the summer tour season is huge. I think the most expensive and the most profitable a tour of the recent memories, U2's 360 tour, which I was lucky enough to attend in Tampa, which was just this huge, massive production. And I think that, as a lot of people pointed out, record executives may look at something like this, or people who are tour managers may look at something like this and say, if an artist is dead, then how much would people pay to go to a hologram Elvis concert, or go to a hologram Beatles concert, or see an artist, live artist, perform with a hologram artist. I mean, it's really interesting. And I think, you know,
I think that's the one that's going to be your kicker is, I think, because, I mean, Brad Paisley, who's a pretty big country star, and Carrie Underwood, who's a huge pop and country star, are using this hologram technology. But after seeing with Tupac, people are reacting like they've never seen it before, ever. So
I think it was a shock of seeing that.
Yeah, but I think what really makes it work so well is, yeah, everyone's seen the ghosts in the Haunted Mansion at Disney or whatever, but to be able to see a Tupac performing alongside of Snoop Dogg, the real Snoop Dogg, just something about the dynamic that they were able to create, which is one of the things that convinces me that it was a impersonator with Snoop Dogg. It may not have necessarily been Josh. It could have been somebody else. It could have been someone who looks nothing like Tupac, and they just used his motions and they just put it over it the same way they do in like sports video games. But there had to have been a person there, and they had to have recreated the concert, not just with the person, but with Snoop Dogg. And that dynamic, that back and forth, I mean, maybe seeing a whole bunch of electronic Beatles wouldn't be great. But if Ringo and Paul McCartney and a George and a John hologram toured as the Beatles, and there were two live Beatles there and two holograms or something, I mean, that would be crazy. So it could change things. It could change things a lot from that perspective.
And apparently, you know, when the hologram came up, people just, because nobody knew about this, people just went dead silent. I mean, it was just kind of a shock. And I think it's a shock of, because Tupac, you know, was killed so young. He was only 25, and it was so long ago, and he's still such a mythical or, you know, infamous figure within the hip-hop, well, within music, period. You know, I could see, you know, imagine our parents or whatever going to see Paul McCartney in concert, and the John Lennon hologram kind of pops up. So if you're a Beatles fan, then that's the kind of feeling I think when people were overcome with. I don't know. It's going to be interesting. I've the latest articles have been about Dr. Dre and Snoop Dogg and kind of a whole gaggle of rappers taking this show on the road and having Tupac appear and having that be kind of a draw. So we'll see how this pans out. And
I think it'll work. I think it'll definitely work. I wouldn't be surprised too, just as a final note. I mean, this is Coachella. I mean, people are fucked up. And they probably like really thought that Tupac was there, that like Tupac decided after 15 years to be like, all right, Coachella 2012, that's the time I'm gonna come back, and people probably,
I mean, when you're an audience, you do not have any sort of line of information, and you're right, from the back, how can you possibly tell that was a hologram?
You can't
I mean, if you were on something, which I'm sure a lot of the audience was, you thought too. You thought, yeah, if you a beer or two, you thought Tupac came back. I bet
Tupac
anything.
Tupac was alive. Could you imagine being in that audience? And now Coachella is also kind of Sunday at Coachella, especially with last year's Kanye West show, which was kind of really kind of a spectacle, and people were going big, going nuts about it the following weeks. And now this with the Tupac coming back, like Sunday night hip hop. The hip-hop headliner on Sunday night at Coachella, like, there's a bar now for them to kind of try to beat. I don't know if you could beat Tupac coming back.
So there you have it, Coachella, Tupac. And now we're going to get into our interview. I was really excited that AG wanted to talk to us because somebody, I'm not going to say who, but somebody associated with Films Insert got AG's name wrong on the site, and actually that's how we got in contact with us. So that's pretty much what we do for all artists. We just intentionally spell their names wrong, and then they correct us, and then we say, hey, would you like to be on the podcast? Which is why if you're looking for Michael Gondry, you need to search for Barry Gondry, B-A-R-R-Y. So that's how we got in touch with AG, and I'm a really huge fan of his Jack White music video. Definitely check that out before the podcast. as well as it's the 16 Saltines, as well as Earl by Odd Future and Hey Jane by Spiritualize. Those are the three ones we really get into. So here we go. Our interview with director A.G. Rojas.
My name is A.G. Rojas. I'm a music video director based in L.A. And I guess I make narrative music videos for cool artists. And that's it.
And I mean, how long have you been at this? Where did you start?
I dropped out of Art Center in Pasadena when I was 19. I was doing film production there. And right after I dropped out, I just started directing music videos with my friend Christopher Black. So we've been doing music videos together since, I've been doing it for like 5 or 6 years, but only like making good videos for like the past 2 years, maybe. So
what changed from, the previous work to good videos?
Well, basically I was really like deep into the like hardcore punk scene in LA. And so that's kind of how I first started doing music videos, was for like hardcore bands and doing performance videos, and also shooting a lot of live shows at different venues and backyard shows and all that type of stuff. And then basically no one like really gave a shit about what I was doing, like the work that I was doing, and never got like any sort of recognition. So I just started being very selective as far as the artists that I work with. And at a certain point I was just like, I'm gonna make a video for like my favorite artist. I did that, and then that was the first video. That was for Jeremy Enoch, who was in a band called Sunny Day Real Estate, which I loved like in high school. So I did that video, and then I guess people like that. And that was just a fully narrative video. So since then I've just been doing videos like that. Yeah.
And you know, speaking of people taking, you know, notice of your work in the past few weeks, you've received a lot of attention for the Jack White 16 Saltines video. Yeah. So we wanted to talk a little bit about that. How did you pitch this video to Jack White?
Well, I was in Atlanta at the time doing a video for this band called Spiritualized. So we were prepping the video, and I get a call from Saul Levitz, the commissioner at Sony. So he was soliciting treatments for this single, because I guess they were getting a lot of ideas, but nothing was really working out. Nothing was catching Jack's eye. So I sat down after I got the track and just wrote it out in a couple hours. And I just wanted to make something that was just basically just as visual assault of all these different moments, like surreal moments in youth around Nashville. And then they liked it, and we went for it. And so like a week later, we went straight from Atlanta to Nashville and prepped it in a week and then shot. And that was it.
Yeah. And as far as the concept goes, I mean, people are, you know, there's a few things you're talking about. There's a lot of violence. There's a lot of really, visceral, interesting imagery. And, one of the things that I think, besides the violence and these really, interesting things, is the people that you guys found. Where'd you find these kids?
Well, we had, I flew out one of my production assistants, Carmela from LA. And so she went out and did a lot of street casting, like just hit the streets, went to skate parks and coffee shops and schools. It just kind of creeped around, like just lurked for some kids and took some pictures. And then, so like, I'd say maybe like 75% of the kids are street cast, and the other 25 came from traditional, casting. Yeah. It all worked out. It was pretty, I mean, it took a while. There's, I think we counted like maybe there was like 40 roles or something that we had to fill, in a week. So it was all, a lot of stuff came down to the last minute, but we made it happen. So, yeah.
I mean, so in for each one of these sort of vignettes, did you have it completely scripted out? So you were looking for the guy who gets, blue milkshake spit in his face and things like that.
Yeah. I mean, it was all written out in the treatment. But the way I like to work, I came up with all the ideas and everything. But once you're on set, different things happen, and things change, and you work with like the spontaneity of certain things. Like for example, the fat kid who's like running around the warehouse breaking shit. That was all on the moment, like we had some free time, and that was one of the kids in the jerking scene. So I just I really liked the way he looked. So we took him aside and had him break stuff. And that was that.
Nice. He must have enjoyed that direction. Just go ahead and just break shit.
Yeah. He was stoked. I mean, I would tell him to like swing the bat and break stuff. And, a lot of times he was a little tentative because he didn't know if he was going to get in trouble or something, you know. But he ended up working out.
And another element that's in this video that that we notice is that you mix sources within these scenes. I wonder if you could talk a little bit where that idea comes from.
I've always liked having different formats in videos. I think like resolution and all that is to me the least interesting part about, you know, shooting digitally. So I just like mixing different things. Like Mike, my DP, and I, we always have like a GoPro on set on different jobs and stuff and see if that stuff works. So one of my friends out there who's my editor in Nashville, he had a VHS camera, and just on a whim, we took it from him and kind of ran around and shooting stuff. And it was funny because the batteries on that camera didn't work, so we were always like tethered basically to a car from an extension cord. So everything had to be shot, you know, 15 feet away from a car. So yeah, I mean, that's kind of, I didn't know that, like, if that stuff was really gonna like be in the video because I hadn't pitched it. But everyone loved it and kept asking for more from the label and Jack's people and stuff. So it all.
So cool. when you do stuff like that, you kind of, it seems like you kind of stay true to like kind of where it comes from. So if it, like, you know, you don't just kind of use a older camera, but have the same kind of setup. You know, you're getting in there with GoPros and you're doing kind of stuff that's kind of built that the camera, shots that the camera is built to do, not just for the look of the graininess, but also for the what the camera is able to do.
Yeah, I mean, I think the reason why we do that stuff, it also adds a certain energy just to the edit and to different things, and always keeps people like interested, I guess, in the videos. Never know what's gonna happen, you know. And it also helps when, because, you know, when you have the Alexa and all these like 60 people on the crew, it's kind of nice when you can just go into a room with a little GoPro or a VHS camera, and it's just you and the actor and just get different moments like that.
Now, Jack White is a guy who, you know, come look, you know, as someone who's watched a lot of his previous videos and is a fan of him, doesn't shy away from, you know, the camera. And he's only here, you know, in the video, you know, very briefly. Was that something he was interested in, kind of having a video where he was, you know, out of the spotlight? Because his, you know, his previous video off the Blunderbuss album was really, really him front and center.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is an assumption, but I think that's one of the reasons why they gravitated towards the treatment was because of, you know, because he's only really at the very beginning and at the end. And it's pretty different, like you said, from all his other videos. Even all the other, like from White Stripes and Raconteurs and Dead Weather, he's in front of the camera for 99% of those videos. He's never really done a video like this where it's mostly narrative, mostly like conceptual. So I think that's one of the reasons why they went with it.
And what's it like? I mean, one of the fun things about this video is people all over the internet have been speculating. I mean, I've read a bunch of ridiculous things, or maybe not ridiculous, but a lot of varied things. One person, like, very matter-of-factly said that this was, like, about hazing rituals at Dartmouth. What's it like kind of to have people, you know, break down your work and look for that symbolism?
I think someone else called it, like, kiddie porn, too, which is funny. But I don't know. I mean, I'm not used to people really delving deeply. And I think a lot of people actually don't. I mean, they just kind of either say I'm like ripping off Gummo or just call it, or just say that they're confused, you know? So anytime that someone wants to make some sort of effort to think about it after they watch a music video, I think that's a positive thing, even though it might be like negative towards the video. So, I mean, I don't know. I think it's cool whenever anyone tries to think about it, but people have asked me like to break down specific vignettes, but I mean, the whole concept of the video is that you have some sort of really basic understanding of each scene, but by the time you get what's going on, you're on to the next scene. So I mean, that's kind of part of the charm of the video, I think.
And I think one of the things that kind of stands out to people about this video is it's kind of features, like, obviously anyone who hasn't seen it, it's features children in a lot of kind of violent and over the top and kind of situations, and use of children is not something that's new to you. That theme appears a lot in your videos, and not only the use of children, but the use of children kind of overcoming or succeeding in kind of like these adult difficult situations. I wonder if you can kind of just tell us kind of where that theme comes from.
I think it all just stems down to my love of Home Alone, basically. No, I mean, I did grow up on all those movies like the same way that you guys did, you know, where it's all these fantasies about childhood and stuff. And it's like you watch the Goonies and you find something relatable into the in it because of how the characters are and who they are, but your life was nothing like that, you know, when you're growing up. So I just create these worlds and these characters that I think would have been like really fun to grow up with. It's always it's some sort of like Peter Pan thing, you know. I don't know.
Yeah, it's it is something about like kids, how they like you just like assume that they want to be having fun as soon as you see them and not kind of doing these adult things. But I wonder that because that's probably true in most cases, and these are actors, but they're also kids. Are they
Well, they're not. I mean, and the other thing is, like, they're not really actors, you know? Like, none of these kids are, like, I mean, these are a lot of them are street cast, you know? So you get that really natural, like, performance from them. So it's not, I mean, as over the top as some of the elements of the video are, the kids, I think, always feel kind of real, you know, not out of place.
So street cast in kind of all the, I mean, because you use kids in a lot of your videos. That's something that you do regularly is try to
Yeah,
street cast.
I mean, yeah, all my videos are all street cast. Most of the characters, you know, not even just the kids, everyone, really.
Now, on your website, one of the things that caught my eye was you have the place where it was shot, really front and center. Like the Hey Jane video shot in Atlanta, what and the 16 Saltines video shot in Nashville. A lot of times these videos will just come, you don't really have a sense of the place. How important is that sense of place in your videos?
It mostly just comes out of like whenever I get an idea to pitch on a video that has any sort of budget, I always try to pitch somewhere that I've never been to before, just because I think that's one of the really fun parts of my job is that I can kind of say that and people will fly me out and I can meet new people and see new places and stuff. So that does play a big part in the videos that I do. And then, for example, like Atlanta, when we shot Spiritualized, like I'd never been to Atlanta before. And we didn't have like a location manager there or anything. Like it was basically me and my production manager, Corbett. Like we just drove around Atlanta for, a week and met new people and stopped, knocked on doors and just found all these real people and cast a bunch of them and stuff. So, I mean, that's just something that just adds to basically my life experience. I don't know.
You should write more videos in tropical locations, I think.
I should. I mean, I try, but sometimes people don't really want to go to Vietnam, you know? I don't know.
Exactly. Have you tried to go to an exotic place like that, like Vietnam, to for that
Yeah, for
place?
sure. I pitched Vietnam for, who was it? Kasabian, like one of their big videos. Like I pitched Vietnam and Russia and all these different countries and stuff, but I think they got freaked out.
I definitely want to talk about the spiritualized Hey Jane video, because it seems like this, maybe started as a short film treatment first before it was a music video. Is that the way it started?
No, it started out as a music video treatment. It was for some reason, I mean, with certain tracks, like I knew I was one of the few people. I'm not sure how many people they had right on that. So I listened to the track, and it was one of those tracks where an image just pops in your head right away, which is incredibly rare. And that was an image of a transvestite in Atlanta just walking around. And so I wrote the treatment, and then I had one conference call with Jason, the vocalist of Spiritualized, and he basically just said approach it like a short film, like if I had written this track for your idea. So that's what we did. And right now we're working on a longer edit of it because we shot dialogue for every single one of those scenes. So there's going to be a longer edit with more dialogue and stuff in the video.
Oh, wow.
And so, a lot of times a music video, in most cases, a music video's intention is to promote the artist in one way or another. You think this music video still is able to do that, however, maybe heavy or kind of taboo the topic may be?
Yeah, I mean, and for something like that, there's always going to be a certain level of controversy attached to the video, which always helps, but a band like Spiritualized, I mean, I do videos. I mean, a band like Spiritualized and people like Gil Scott-Heron and some of the other artists that I've done videos for, like, they don't need that much help when it comes to selling albums. Like, they have their cult following that they've amassed for decades. And so they're at a point in their career, and same with Jack White, where they can take risks with videos. And I think that's why they come to me, because they know that they're probably not they're probably going to get something that's a little more like interesting and narrative and cinematic. So, yeah.
And you know, the you have this sort of, you know, amazing Russian arc-esque, you know, one shot, all shot in the Hey Jane, video. I wonder if you could talk about that, because it's not just, you know, the logistics of having a one shot, but the you know, the violence of, you know, the fight scene, and it seems, you know, very, you know, real. How did you guys set that up?
That whole shot was influenced just because there's a natural break in the song, like 3.5 minutes in. So I wanted to separate the song in a certain way. So one shot fight scene, just that was the first thing that came to my mind. So basically we had a stunt coordinator in Atlanta, and we spent a whole day at this little motel just practicing everything with the actors. And then we only had like 3 or 4 hours the following day to shoot the whole thing. So we got kind of lucky. We did probably like 15 takes of the whole scene. And then just swagged it out. It worked.
And is it more nerve-wracking to do, you know, one of these shots and then break it up into many, or is it you know, a little better once, you know, it's only one shot, and once I've got it, you know, it's done.
It's done. Yeah, I mean, that's one of the positive elements about it, is that you can tell on set whether or not it worked. And I went into it like, you know, a lot of people had told me, make sure that either way you cover it in a way that you can have cuts and all this sort of stuff. But I wanted to be like super, I wanted to just commit to the idea of this one take shot. So it was kind of a risk, but me and Mike were at each other's throats like a lot of the time, you know, just because there'd be just little things that would screw it up, you know, and you'd have to start over. But I don't know. And my friend Corbett too, he also, like, we put a GoPro in the room, so there's going to be a behind the scenes video that's going to come out pretty soon, where people can see exactly how it was done and stuff.
Where'd you find, because you know, the whole thing kind of hinges on him, was he locally casted?
Yeah, he was. He had just moved from Florida a few months before, and for that, for finding a transvestite, we had to resort to traditional casting. So he was one of the many people that we saw. And whenever I do video, I try to find characters who share some sort of who have some sort of relation to the character that I'd written. And he had a kid, like that was his kid in the video, and there were just certain things about his life and about his just story that resonated with the character that I had written, and so, you know, it's just too good to pass up, so we hired him.
And he is he is a transvestite in real life.
Yeah, he is.
And how much into that world did you need to get to make the video real?
I didn't have to get too much into that world. I mean, I obviously like researched it and try to find people who were in that world around Atlanta and stuff. But I wanted to approach it in a way where I wasn't. I mean, I think transvestites and transsexuals are portrayed in the media as being like really flamboyant, either really flamboyant or just really like not centered people. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to create a character who, even if you weren't in that scene, that you could relate to them in a certain way, and that you didn't see them as a caricature, because then I think the ending and some of the moments with the family and stuff wouldn't have really worked, you know? Mm-hmm. So that's why, you know, the styling and a lot of things about the video, it's not like a David LaChapelle video, you know? It's right. it's just more real, I think. Yeah.
Another one of your videos that's kind of, as far as it being real, is kind of on the opposite end, and that's the video for Earl, which is a Wolfgang video, where there's a lot of what appears to be fake blood all over the place. I'm assuming that it's fake. You know, you can never really be sure with those guys. There, you know, there's always a anytime you see a picture of them, somebody has a giant cast on their arm or something like that. So those guys are, you know, how much of that, those blood takes is kind of you, and how much comes from them? Are you kind of just filming them and letting them go nuts, or are you kind of directing them around?
I wrote the idea a couple of days before we went out and shot it, and I just had my friend Jesse come out with a bunch of like blood and nails and hair and just weird things like that, and we just rolled around LA. Just we'd find different places that were familiar to them, like the Fairfax District and Hollywood High, and one of their friends' houses, and just kind of made up the scenes as we went along, all kind of I would tell them exactly what to do and stuff. And 50% of that video was actually shot by themselves. Another 50 was shot by me. So, yeah.
And I think one of the things that people, one of the things Doug was alluding to was, I think people often think when they watch these type of videos is what is real and sort of, you know, what is, you know, pre-planned and things like that. What, yeah. You know, what were they drinking in that video?
That morning I just raided my pantry and I grabbed like oregano and cough syrup and just weird, expired prescription pill bottles. And we bought some 40s, and so we mixed it all up. But there's a cut, and I like we gave them just fresh cups of nothing for them to pretend to drink, you know. So yeah, and apparently it's become like a thing. It's on Urban Dictionary and stuff. It's called death juice or something. I think people have been trying to do it, but I don't think most kids could afford to make that happen. That's yeah, really the only thing deterring them from doing it, I think.
Yeah, because that drink is when you put all those ingredients together, it's kind of expensive. Yeah, it's got to be pretty expensive drink.
Especially for like 15 kids, you know, to partake equally. So, yeah. But yeah, I get emails all the time from kids like in West Virginia asking me like how to make it and if it's real and stuff. So, yeah.
And, you know, when talking to them about the concept of the video, I mean, you know, yeah. One of the things that's so compelling about Odd Future is that sense of reality. Mm-hmm. You know, how much are they aware and involved in that process of, you know,
they were so in tune with their aesthetic and stuff. Mm-hmm. So it was, I mean, they just let me do exactly what I want to do. This was a time before like managers and all that and tour buses and stuff, you know?
Yeah.
So it was, I just came up with the idea and I just told it to Earl on the phone and we just shot it and there weren't like any notes or anything, you know, about the edit or anything about that. Like I just shot it, edited it in half a day and just put it on Vimeo. That was it.
How do you know these guys originally?
My producer Chris, his cousin was friends with Earl, and we were gonna cast him in a video, but he didn't work out. So I stumbled upon his MySpace and listened to him, and this was when he was rapping over like MF Doom instrumental beats, and so we hit him up and we were like, dude, we have to do a video for you. And he said, well, in 6 months, I'm working on my album right now. It's going to be like totally different. The subject matter is going to be a lot more positive and stuff. I'm changing my whole style. And then when the album came out, it was like way more dark than anything he'd ever done. And so we hit him up and we were like, yo, it's time to do it. So we did it. Yeah.
Nice. And then, I mean, did that video start receiving a lot more attention once, you know, Odd Future, you know, blew up about a year and a half ago?
Yeah, I mean, I think it definitely helped. It started getting, I mean, I always knew that video was going to have legs and that it was going to, like, it wasn't going to get a lot of views, like, from the start because no one knew who they were. But once people started seeing that video and then obviously once their other videos started coming out, you know, it kind of blew up. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
And you describe, you know, your work as, you know, narrative driven.
Yeah.
You know, who do you, you know, at this time, do you believe is kind of, you know, making those kind of videos that you're striving to make? You know, who are your influences, contemporaries?
I have like, well, when I started I used to work at like different production companies, and I worked at a production company called Street Gang Films. And that was with some directors named like Vincent Haycock and Paul Miner and Andreas Nielsen and stuff. So I used to help them out with like treatments and on set. So those are some directors that really influenced me when I first started doing music videos. And then obviously other people who I've met along the way, like Daniel Wolf and Gavras and stuff, those are directors who like, you know, inspire me. They can kind of just do whatever they want to do. People have like a certain trust in them. So yeah, those guys.
and what do you think in that style of video is the real role of the song itself? Is it kind of secondary to a narrative documentary style, or is it kind of one in one?
I don't think so. I mean, I don't necessarily like rehash ideas for different tracks. I usually try and come up with an original idea influenced by the track. And that comes out of, it doesn't usually come out of the lyrics. It just comes out of like the rhythm of the track and just the tone and overall atmosphere of what I'm listening to. And music has always been something that's influenced me heavily. So images are kind of conjured up in my mind pretty easily when I listen to music. So, yeah.
And as far as what's next for you, I mean, you mentioned, you know, the warehouse that you're putting together, you know, the artistic collective that you've got going on.
Yeah.
How, you know, in your future, what part do music videos play? Are they a stepping stone to features, or are you more interested, you know, really in the medium?
I don't think music videos are really like a lifelong career. I think there's a certain cutoff point. There's a certain ageism involved to them. I think the younger that you are, the fresher your ideas are and stuff when it comes to music videos. So I really like, you know, when there's like cool new young music video directors. So that's kind of what the collective is going to be all about, which is creating just original like narrative music videos. And for me, it's always, I have always approached it as a sort of like film school. I mean, I think just that the fact that you're able to come up with their ideas, because I mean, I do commercials too, but you're not given as much freedom, obviously. Like the fact that you can come up with an idea for an artist that you respect and for a track that you like is kind of, it's the only place that you can really do that. And it's a great way to start to learn how to like tell stories and improve that before you start getting into films. So yeah.
And have you got anything in the pipeline right now?
I have a short film that I did last year, which premiered at Slam Dance in January. So that's set playing at like various festivals and stuff, and hopefully it'll be online in the next few months, like late summer. And then I have a music video that I did in January for this Italian dude named Congo Rock. So that's going to be coming out in the next couple weeks. And that's it. Just taking a lot of naps, walking my dog, and just Googling myself. That's it.
And how are you doing on the Google?
It's pretty good. I mean, sometimes I get caught up in certain things. Like I just found this like Jack White forum, which had a lot of like negative comments and people calling me a hack and stuff. And that's kind of disturbing, you know, that people take that stuff so seriously. But you know, it all just comes with the territory of being a narcissist. So it's all good.
Yeah, Google is really a dangerous tool for narcissists. You can get caught up in that stuff.
Totally. And being called AJ doesn't help either, you know. It's harder for me to Google myself when you don't spell my name right, you know.
So big thanks to AG for talking to us. He's a really cool guy, and he's got a lot of, and as he mentioned in the podcast, he's got the behind the scenes of the Spiritualized Hey Jane video coming out soon, which I'm definitely looking to check out.
And it will be on the site. Pow.
Boom. So here we go. We have to do our picks of the week. We got to tell the people what they should be checking out.
We do. And specifically, you do now.
I do. And I'm going to go a little different for my pick of the week this week, because it was a video that I saw earlier today, and it really blew my mind for a few reasons. And the video is Hot Problems by Double Take. Now, this is a low-budget music video as well as a low-budget song. And I actually don't recommend going to watch this video, and I actually don't even think it will be on the site, because I don't think it's a really... I guess it could be an official music... It is an official music video, but for a really awful song. I mean, it's bad. It's these two girls in a limo riding around. It looks like L.A., in Hollywood somewhere in L.A. Talking about, even though they're hot, they have problems as well. They don't really talk about what those problems are, but it's really painful. It's really poorly done. You look at this and Rebecca Black, it looks... You know, it sounds good next to this, but I wanted to put that out there as an example for a reason, and that is a reason to, or an example of why we as viewers should sort of appreciate the really high quality work that is being done in music videos right now, because you know we watch all these great high quality music videos. And these are high quality, whether they're shot in like a guerrilla style, you know, run and gun with no lights, or they're shot with a huge crew with a lot of money. They're really, really well done, and they're really a lot of fun to watch. And you know, nobody wants to watch something that's really crappy. And this video is, you know, at the very, very sort of bottom of the barrel in terms of its quality and its production values. From the start of the video to the end of the video, they're just in this limousine. Nothing happens whatsoever except for them mugging at the camera. There's, at 54 seconds, there's a glorious, awkward B-roll shot of the light up drink holders in the limo. And I think sometimes we take for granted the you know, all the, you know, really creative and also really technically talented people that are making music videos right now. And you kind of look at all these things and says, well, of course, you know, every single day you can get, you know, 10 or 25 new music videos that'll blow your mind. But I think it's important to kind of take to remember the, you know, creative output that's being, you know, put forth here, and that it's not trivial. It is really, I think as we talked about with Sammy Kriegstein last week, it is really a movement with in music videos. I think it's important to look at something like this to kind of see where we could be as opposed to where we are with the medium of music videos. So it's really funny. You laugh at it because it's so bad, and you know, the girls' faces are all orange, and it's trying to be, you know, a high-budget production, but it's really miserably failing at that. So that is Hot Problems by Double Take. There is no director listed, but it is by Old Bailey Productions. And when I looked at this earlier today, the comments were turned off, but they've been turned on YouTube. So fire up your YouTube account and have some fun. And that's my pick.
Have at it, you guys.
Have you seen this video, Doug?
I have not. I look forward to watching it and knowing what happens already, because I just heard you talk about it.
There's nothing. Nothing happens.
No, I know. I was not tuned in. I don't even know what video you're doing. No, it's not. It's not true. It's not true. I do completely. But I haven't seen it. But a video I have seen is this video that I'm about to describe to you. My pick of the week is by a band called The Lumineers, and the song is called Ho Hey, and it's by director Ben Fee. And The Lumineers are a band that I've been listening to very regularly lately, ever since Isaac Ravi Shankara posted one of their songs on Facebook, and that's been one of the coolest parts about being Facebook friends with music video directors, is that you find out about other awesome music videos, and this Ho Hey video is a prime example of that. And what I really like about this video is I think that it's, the style of this music video is it's kind of just a bunch of visual elements. The band is kind of just kind of walking through what appears to be maybe an old school or a church, something like that, but really what's the appeal of the video is that the imagery really matches the song really well, and I was thinking about that this is probably one of the more difficult styles of music videos to be able to just add something to a video visually, or to a song visually, that makes it more interesting than when simply listened to, but not having much actually happen. I mean, they kind of just, the band is kind of walking down the hallway, and they're like, lights strung down the hallway, and the lights kind of flash with the sound of, or with the beat of the song, and the band walks down the hallway, and then at a certain point, as the music starts to kind of swell, the school or church is kind of overrun with people dressed in the same clothes that the band is dressed in, and there could be something behind all of this imagery, but I think what's important is that it doesn't really matter. I think that it's still kind of a very appealing video to kind of to watch and enjoy, and the Lumineers are a band that make music that's also really great to listen to. So if you like this song, maybe check them out on Daytrotter, because they got a good one on there.
What is Daytrotter?
It's a website, and they have like a studio where they invite bands in to the studio to kind of re-record versions of their song, and then they release it for free for members of the site, and really awesome versions of the songs. You know, they'll oftentimes do different things with the songs and stuff. It's really cool. So my pick of the week is Ho Hey Lumineers. My website of the week is Daytrotter.
What song do I know by Mystical?
Mystical?
Yeah.
I don't know, a lot. Shake Your Ass. Shake Your Ass.
Ah, right, okay. He's going to jail.
Again.
Yeah. 90 days.
He was in jail for rape before, so this 90-day charge is not as bad, I'm assuming.
I hope not.
He was in No Limit, so he was also like a lot of the Master P songs from back then. He was probably in a lot of those songs too. He's an interesting thing about Mystical. He is actually a Desert Storm vet.
Really?
So he is the only No Limit soldier who is actually,
a soldier.
And that's all we have for you this week, everybody. Thank you for joining us on Music Video Land. That's it.